Well, I don't know about you, but I come to church this morning feeling both tired and energized. We started the week with the Voting Rights Amendment's demise, a decision based... No. I'll give you that moment in just a second. The Voting Rights Amendment's demise, a decision based... Yeah, thank you. A decision based on claims that racism is an outdated notion, even while Paula Deen seems to be offering a one-woman counter-argument. The Texas legislature, meanwhile, attempted to pass what would have been one of the most restrictive anti-choice bills in the U.S., only to find themselves blocked, first by a female senator, standing and telling women's stories for 11 hours, and then most crucially by the mostly female public witnesses taking over the filibuster with chants and cheers and refusals to be silent. Whew. If you haven't seen it out there, if you haven't seen the video, go and find it. Find exactly that moment where the people take over. Because no matter your feelings and your conclusions on choice and that very kind of messy, complicated debate in our society, that moment where the people refuse to be silent, where women's voices rise up together, is powerful. Meanwhile, back at the Supreme Court, tribal sovereignty came head to head with the personal heartbreak of an adoption story gone terribly wrong. And it's hard to tell if there are any winners at all from that case. And then there's DOMA. In a single swift kick that we all know was actually built on the foundation of decades of sacrifice and courageous coming out, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act is nearly dead. And now you can cheer. I'm sorry, I made you wait all the way till there to be able to do that. Not all the way dead, though, which leads those of us in civil unions still not able to get married. These, of course, are just the big headlines of the week, that backdrop that our regular lives are set against as the world moves ever on. And those regular lives, of course, have their own unfolding. New diagnoses, new jobs, new friendships, broken relationships, broken bones, losses and gifts, big and small. No wonder we might feel both tired and energized. Which brings me to the plan for today's sermon. Today we're doing ecclesiology, also known as polity, also known as the question of how churches should organize and govern themselves, also known as one of my favorite topics in all of church geekdom. Now, in case any of you are wondering if maybe I just made the biggest non sequitur in all of sermon history, let me see if I can connect the dots. Here's my proposal. All the stuff that happened this week, and all the stuff that happens in our world all the time, all the stuff that lifts us up and breaks our hearts, the stuff that spurs us on and then makes us want to pull the covers back up over our heads, all this stuff is fundamentally connected to this seemingly obscure topic of how we Unitarian Universalists organize ourselves. In fact, my proposal to all of you is that the way we organize ourselves, if we fully engage with its promise and potential, is our practical, everyday opportunity and direct response to all that this world might throw in the way of our vision of beloved community. And to help explain why this is true, I gotta take us back about 400 years or so to the early 17th century, when religious seekers fled England en masse, not because they had a theological dispute, they had no beef with the content of their creeds. Their concern was purely a matter of form. They believed, this is kind of radical, that the spirit of truth does not flow according to an organizational chart. Crazy. and wisdom could not be contained in a single book or rightfully interpreted only by those at the top of a patriarchal hierarchy. And these beliefs led them to radically new conclusions about how churches should be organized and governed. Unable to convince the Church of England that they were right, they set sail for New England, what became New England, where they began enacting their new vision, letting the spirit of truth flow freely and letting love guide them. They held all kinds of lectures and study groups. They chatted and debated. They testified and they founded church after church, many of which still exist today as Unitarian Universalist or UCC congregations. By 1648, they'd gotten so clear on their vision that they created a treatise, what became known as the Cambridge Platform. Now, I know it sounds obscure, but you're gonna just have to trust me or go read it yourself, but the Cambridge Platform is a beautiful document. It's comprehensive, and it describes everything you can imagine about how a church should organize and govern itself. And it's all based in this central belief that you cannot contain the spirit of love, that truth flows freely, and the best way to follow the ways of truth and love is through free gatherings of people who promise to walk together, hold each other accountable, and learn and grow according to the ways of love. It describes what membership means, what the role of an ordained minister is, what the purpose of a church is, and even what to do when a church gets so big it overflows its building. It's pretty remarkable how often I find myself in conversations today that mirror the issues taken up by the Cambridge Platform 350 years ago. So when the voting rights decision came through earlier this week, it was right after I'd read this just like one more heartbreaking story of an immigrant family being torn apart. And then one of my colleagues in the spring, she had just been telling me about families who had lost everything in the fires. And then, I don't know, somebody in the church came and talked to me and told me this most heartbreaking story from her life. And then my kids had an extra hard day and were just impossibly cranky and short-tempered, and they would just not stop fighting with each other. And everywhere I looked, things just all seemed verging on the hopeless. And so when I find myself in this sort of place, feeling both tired and energized all at once, filled with both the sense of the goodness of the world and also its brokenness, its promise and its failure to fulfill that promise, when I find myself looking for a place to pin my hopes, it's true I place my faith in the Cambridge Platform. I place my faith in this vision of a communion of covenanted communities described by religious seekers of the 17th century. Which, to be clear, means I place my faith in two layers of community. The individual covenanted community and then the covenant between and among communities. The first layer, of course, that's us. That's the Foothills Unitarian Church. I place my faith in this community and its promise of diverse individuals who come together freely in a promise to walk together, to hold each other accountable, to share stories, discern truth and the ways of love, and to bring more of this love into the greater world. But there's a second layer, equally necessary to sustain my faith. For a single congregation is not enough to meet the world in all its possibility and challenge, no matter how fabulous that congregation may be. And yes, I do mean you. But a single fabulous congregation is not enough to save the world. We need a network of congregations, a coalition, what the Cambridge Platform calls that communion of churches. We need communities of practice and resistance who come together to share their visions and experiences, to help each other see what they can't see from their particular locality. Communions of churches to do as the Cambridge Platform outlines, care for one another, consult with each other, offer each other counsel, teach each other, call each other to our best selves, help each other out of dysfunctional patterns and infighting when we get stuck there, raise our voices for one another, stand in solidarity, share in worship and learning and practice, and hold each other up. The world needs this great network of communities who share Unitarian Universalist values and commitments, for life is large and time is short, and the call of beloved community beckons. And yet, for some reason, this communion of congregations is just not something we've been often all that good at. Not something many of our churches have chosen to practice. We choose instead to remain isolated, missing out on that greater promise of our chosen faith. 2 years ago, our good friends, Jill and Andy, were their names, they joined the Foreign Service, which means they moved to Israel. It was a real loss to us, as they and their two children, who were precisely like one of those within a week of our two kids' age, they all moved to Israel. And ever since they left, we've been looking for our new Jill and Andy. We joked, but it has been a real struggle. Losing them in our lives, it was a big deal. Hanging out with them was easy and routine and unguarded. How do you develop such a friendship? I mean, sometimes these things just happen, but most of the time, you have to work at it. And so we've been trying. In fact, we have our eyes on a family right now. Don't tell me you don't do this. They are a family in our literal neighborhood. Our kids play all the time, and they get along great. And our casual interactions have led us to believe that we as parents share some basic values and interests. But how do we know for sure? And how do we even begin? Will hanging out with them be easy or awkward? Will they even want to get to know us? Will we like one of them more than the other? Will they like one of us more than the other? Reaching out from our isolation and forming those relationships we so deeply crave and need in our lives is no easy task. Neighbors are really just strangers who happen to live near us, the Reverend Meg Riley reminds us. Multiple religious traditions implore us to love our neighbor as a baseline for a good life. But we might just as easily say, love the stranger. And there's nothing easy about building relationships with strangers, with loving those with whom we may share nothing in common except a property line. And yet that property line is a tangible reminder that though we may be strangers, our lives are inescapably interconnected. We are all in this together. And the choice before us is simply whether we will live into the blessing of intentional relationship and risk forging friendship, or keep to ourselves in our isolated individual lives. This is what a number of us were up to last week in Louisville at our annual General Assembly. We were attempting to forge and strengthen friendships across congregations, turn strangers into friends. Now, I know Eleanor led a rousing service last week all about General Assembly, so I won't delve too much into it again here. But suffice it to say that General Assembly is a head and heart-spinning experience, with workshops and worship and business meetings and more chalice-related items for sale than you even knew existed. And yet, ultimately, the value of such a big gathering of Unitarian Universalists is in the relationships created and strengthened with others out there doing their best to serve our faith. Truthfully, however, GA is not where I would recommend that most of us practice the second layer of our covenant. National gatherings, they're expensive to get to, and they are indeed overwhelming. And forging those meaningful, lasting relationships can be difficult. So instead, I suggest we start locally. Within an hour in every direction, there are four Unitarian Universalist congregations in Laramie, Cheyenne, Greeley, and Loveland. Now, perhaps you've already gotten this connection, but let me say it plain. Developing meaningful relationships with other congregations is often like trying to find a new Jill and Andy. It takes a commitment of time, a willingness to get real, a willingness to share our struggles and our questions, our resources and our big ideas. And it often means we find ourselves striving to make relationships with people with whom we share a property line, but seemingly not much else. And yet, being a good neighbor means persisting through these obstacles so that we might discover our hidden possibilities and our deeper goodness. The eight Unitarian Universalist congregations in the Boulder, Denver area not so long ago knew each other only as strangers in close proximity. But through regular meetings of lay leaders and ministers, they have gone on to initiate shared worship, workshops, and regularly share resources to move forward their shared justice goals. Perhaps most notably, their collaboration led to the invention of a new ministerial role in the Front Range, what we call the Beloved Community Coordinator. It's a position filled by my friend and colleague, Kirsten Homblett. Kirsten's task is simply to help these congregations connect with each other, and then to help them connect out with community partners, and then to offer the best practices in spiritually grounded Unitarian Universalist work for social change. In turn, the congregations are able to more fully leverage their collective power and lift their collective voice in witness to the call of love in the state of Colorado. I am proud and excited to say that in the coming year, Foothills will for the first time be a participating partner in Kirsten's work, as the Boulder Denver congregations have invited Colorado Springs and Fort Collins to join in this communion of churches, now expanding all across the Front Range. You can hear more about Kirsten's work when she fills our pulpit on the 21st of July. Looking ahead to the fall, there will be the 12th annual Standing on the Side of Love worship service on the Capitol steps, where we will gather with 10 other area congregations to witness for GLBT, immigration, and racial and economic justice. There will also be a two-day gathering of all the congregations in Colorado and Wyoming for a time of shared learning and worship and relationship building. You can certainly look to your extra and intercom for as we get closer to the fall for more information. I'd love to see a big Foothills contingent at both of these. We are, after all, one of the largest churches in the two states, and I think we could become a leader. Not just show up, but become a leader in what it means to have a communion of churches, a network, a coalition of Unitarian Universalists across all of Colorado. There are still so many possibilities yet unrealized in living into this second layer of our promises for relationships, particularly for the Northern Colorado, Southern Wyoming group of congregations. What ideas do you have, and how will you begin? Life, whether in the form of the political process or by way of our everyday lives, it can be exhausting and exhilarating. And through it all, our faith invites us to witness that we need not go it alone. We can choose to step out of our isolation. We can say hello to our neighbors. We can hold a block party. We can learn the names of those who are near us and who share our world. We can reach out beyond the walls of this congregation into other communities to learn from one another, to help each other, to strengthen our shared resolve to struggle together, and to widen our reach and our view. We are a part of a great network, inheritors of a great legacy and tradition of free churches walking together in that free spirit of mutual love. On this week, filled with promise and heartbreak. In this world filled with possibility and pain, let us all place our shared hope in this practice of our faith. Person to person, community to community, congregation to congregation, sharing our individual lights so that we might create one great flame, offering a sign to all of a bright new hope for all the world. May it be so, and amen.